It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Welcome back, 8 o'clock hour, After Hours. Ron Kopp, arrowheadpride.com, joins me now. Ron, a big fixture when we did the NFL draft, and he just keeps on plugging away with all sorts of Chief stories daily. And, well, there's been a lot because there's been mini camps going on, but not anymore, Ron. Not anymore. It is vacation time for the Chiefs. Stay out of trouble. So you got to really think of content, my friend. Welcome, Ron.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's the time of year where any headlines that are generated by the Chiefs are usually not good headlines.
No.
Here until training camp. So let's not get many headlines. I will have to get creative, and we will do so at Arrowhead Pride. But yeah, no, honestly, getting a lot out of OTAs this year with all the newness, right, in the team. So there's a lot to write about, dive into, and we got a lot of press conference stuff too, and now we got a trade, right? So there's a bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah, there is. We'll start with that. Wanya Morris. Interesting pick. That was in Kansas City. It was that Friday night, the second night of the draft. They drafted two offensive guys that night. It was Rashee Rice and Wanya Morris. One's in jail and one just got traded to Atlanta. Wanya Morris, man, here's the thing. He came in, he had a great attitude. Like, he'd really rededicated himself a little bit. I thought this might have been kind of his time to shine. We'll see what he does in Atlanta. I know there was other teams interested in Wanya Morris. Obviously, he didn't fit in here with Jalen Moore, Chu Godrick, Asa Pole, and then Khalil Benson, kind of the new guy, you know, on the map. We'll talk about him in a second. But Wanya Morris gets moved for a sixth-round pick. Now, I actually think this is kind of good because it's a sixth-round pick in the 27 draft that's going to be loaded. And they lost their sixth-rounder for Justin Fields. So the Chiefs lost the sixth-rounder. They get one back for Wanya Morris, and the Chiefs gave him a seventh, which isn't a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but it was cool they got that sixth back that they lost for Fields.
Yeah, well, I think the most interesting part of this is that Andy Reid is openly talking about there being pretty much a competition at right tackle, not necessarily wanting to say Jalen Moore is a starter and you know, other guys competing to be behind him. In his press conference this morning, he talked about how he feels great about the other four spots, and he would feel good about whoever, you know, is in that fifth spot, but wouldn't, you know, just call Jalen Moore the mainstay more so than the true starter. Well, that's just interesting because Wanya Morris would be one of those players potentially competing for that right tackle spot if it isn't, you know, completely cemented. He's going to Atlanta seemingly to compete for the right tackle position. That's what Jeremy Fowler of ESPN is reporting, right? And Jawan Taylor's already there, so he's got a buddy to learn right tackle with, and that's actually the blind side down in Atlanta, which is funny to think about. You know, that's Tua and Michael Penix down yep. there. One or the other. It's the blind side. So, you know, it's a more important position, I guess, down in Atlanta at the right tackle spot. All that to say, yeah, you would think if this whole trade was about getting him to play, it tells me the Chiefs were just like, yeah, you're not going to be our right tackle, so let's get you somewhere else. And that tells you a lot about who is in Kansas City at the right tackle position. Now, Wanya Morris has been here, so they've seen what they got from him, and they've kind of maybe understood, all right, there's only so much more, or maybe not any more, we can get out of this guy. You know, there's newness in these other guys where, I mean, a guy like Khalil Benson was a rookie minicamp tryout signing, but one that was like, wait, how is this guy in rookie minicamp tryouts? He's a big dude, athletic, and was obviously the primary right tackle, starting right tackle for Indiana last year during the national championship run. He did miss a few games due to injury. It seemed like he didn't finish out the national championship game, seemingly due to injury, unconfirmed, but it seemed like that was the case. It didn't seem like it was ever a benching or anything. So you're talking about an experienced right tackle.
Yeah, guy he was that going was against Mezidor and Bain.
Right, and a guy that was originally at Indiana transferred out to a bigger school in Colorado was the school and came back.
Yeah, he came back. He leaves and comes back.
Yeah, right. And you know, I think that's a, you know, it's a guy that, you know, he was proud of the program, proud of the story. And honestly, if you look at my, if you follow me on X, I, you know, back when they signed him, I had a few clips. Man, that guy has some good football IQ, I would say, at the very least, where hustle, effort, you know, he's running at the end of a pick six against Oregon and late in the fourth quarter, and he's the only lineman there to push the interceptor out of bounds. Had a pancake on a pass protection where he's coming all the way across from, you know, across the center's face to smack a dude as he's trying to get, you know, loop inside. There's something there, and it's surprising to me that he was, you know, a rookie minicamp tryout, not even an undrafted free agent signing. But clearly Andy Reid is apparently he even mentioned him, you know, to the fans while the fans were there the other day at practice. Kind of mentioned Benson as a guy to watch out for a right tackle. So there's a reason they're leaving that open, and now Wanya Moore is being traded. I think it says a lot about the guys at right tackle not named Jalen Moore.
And the one thing about Benson, too, is you're right. I mean, he didn't really talk about undrafted free agents. He really didn't talk about you until you're, you know, going to be on a team. He didn't really like talking about rookies, to be honest with you, were drafted.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
Here's a guy in Benson that didn't get invited to the combine, goes undrafted, part of that awesome Indiana offense with Fernando Mendoza, Hemby, and Kalen Black in the backfield. I mean, so there was some running blocking and a lot of pass blocking as well with the all the stuff that Mendoza did and Elijah Surratt and E.J. Williams and others. Omar Cooper, you know, there was good. It was a good offense. And it's interesting, though, because you're right. He was invited to just the rookie. It was like a rookie tryouts is what it was. You know,
right.
You have your undrafted free agents you get right after the draft, but you have to fill out your some guys to be there for the rookie minicamp. And he was invited to stay. So you don't really hear him talking about guys like that. So I am really intrigued with Khalil Benson. And I know he's right tackle there. I do think it's going to be imperative, though, to work somebody behind Simmons just in case of injury. Because if something happens to Simmons, then all of a sudden you have to move somebody that you had at right tackle depth to left tackle. It becomes hugely important for the Kansas City Chiefs to have depth at left tackle because just Simmons played 8 games last year. He's missed 19 games between his last year at Ohio State and his first year in the NFL. 19 games, a lot of games to miss in the last 2 seasons. So you have to plan ahead. What are we going to do if he gets hurt?
Right. And so that even tells you even more, I think, about how the Chiefs feel about Essa Pohl too, a guy that played left tackle for them last year, you know, stepped in when obviously, you know, things got shuffled around because Wanya Morris actually was playing left tackle for 1 snap and, you know, late in the season and got hurt and wasn't playing anymore from that point on. And so they clearly feel like whether, you know, and honestly, it may just be like I kind of said earlier, they know what they had in Wanya Morris. They know that they're not squeezing anything else out of it. They're going to take advantage of someone else thinking they can squeeze more out of it. And they're just going to ride with the new guys, you know, the new kind of, because Essa Pohl, and I mean, these are guys that, you know, have, you know, Wanya Morris was a day 2 draft pick. These are guys that, you know, didn't have that sort of draft capital, didn't have that sort of pedigree going into the NFL, but they're clearly trusting him because you're right. I mean, there's no reason to be, all right, we're set. Josh Simmons is going to play 17 games. This isn't Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey, who came in right away and started, you know, right away and just gave you no doubt to ever feel like, I mean, you know, injury is always an injury, but I mean, you know, those guys are going to play every snap they can. You know, it seems like, you know, Josh Simmons, you know, you don't have that necessarily that same clarity, you know, with him playing the full season. So yeah, it is just, to me, it says a lot about how they feel about their tackle position that they didn't address at all this offseason. You know, Khalil Benson was their investment through the draft in right tackle. We now, talked about him being a rookie minicamp. They didn't have any undrafted signing or draft pick at the position.
Yeah, Jalen Moore can clearly go over to the left side too. So that is an option for him
if
there's an injury or something. So he can go over there. But Josh Simmons lost the weight. He's down to 285 now. Looks great. This is good for mobility because he's always been an incredibly athletic guy. He can get out in space and do some things. And we talked about it earlier with Julio. Pass blocking, he was exceptional. He's a very good pass blocking tackle. The run blocking, he wasn't. 48.1 grade, 83rd out of 89 tackles. And the Chiefs are going to have more of an emphasis on running. Now, if you want to think, well, that's because of the bad running backs the Chiefs had, that could the system, what they ran, I'll buy into that because all that stuff is true. Now there's no excuse for it. You bring in a new running backs coach. You got Emma Johnson. You got Ken Walker, DeMarcado. Your running back room is loaded. So it's imperative for him to be good at the run blocking, and hopefully, you know, shedding the weight does help in that area.
Yeah, you know, Andy Reid kind of made the comment today talking about that point that, you know, Josh Simmons isn't like the natural big guy, right? You know, you have tackles that are just hulking, you know, men that are just, you know,
he's the shortest arms he's ever drafted a tackle.
Right. You know, he is kind of more of that athletic tackle that, you know, you almost need to put weight on more so than you know, you try to slim him down. Or yeah, no, I mean, he's an interesting fit. You know, Andy Reid's always had those bulking, you know, lengthy, just kind of, you know, swallow you up tackles, and he's not necessarily that. He's just a very, very good left tackle in terms of his technique is just polished. You know, we all saw that last year in flashes. So yeah, no, I think you're going to have to maybe live with some of that run blocking stuff, especially understanding that, you know, you that right side of the line is really what you want to run behind, you know, really what you want to, you know, in terms of just kind of having that Creed Trey Smith combo, you know, on the right side to kind of start with. And so, yeah, you know, a lot of your dominant run plays might be that way. And Josh Simmons is that, you know, he's got that athleticism to be that cutoff blocker, right, on the backside of zone run.
Yeah, and Kingsley's very good to get out in space, too.
Right. And so when you think about what their strengths are, their strengths are maybe as that backside, or those backside blockers kind of getting in space, cutting off D tackles and linebackers, you know, flowing over rather than, you know, leading the way, right? And so, yeah, it might be more of a tell, you know, if you start really leaning that way. But at least you kind of have something there where, you know, you have the Trey Smith, Creed Humphrey paving the way, and maybe those guys, you know, can really, you know, as they work on being more dominant run blockers, they can still be, you know, plus blockers in terms of cutoff, you know, backside blockers.
What do you make of the Rice situation where he fits the receivers? Ron, you and I went back and forth on this through the draft and everything about wide receivers. I don't know what you're thinking about 27, but I hope it's a wide receiver in the first round. But so I don't know where you're thinking on 27 at this point. But Rice, I said to Julio, I think it's like a perfect situation for not perfect situation that your number one receiver's in jail. But I mean, this is his prove it time. Because he saw all these other receivers that play 3 years get these extensions. He didn't get the extension. You know, he's got a lot to prove. This is his livelihood. It is imperative for him personally to have a great year with the Chiefs, which that's a good situation with the Chiefs when you have a receiver that needs to go out there and do damage.
Well, I think the great part about it is he's not the only one. You know, Xavier Worthy is kind of in a similar situation in terms of prove it, in terms of, you know, maybe being – not for the same reasons, but just maybe being a little doubted in terms of, or underlooked, you know, just not, or overlooked, I should say, because he was a first round pick and Rice has proven it. And Rice is has passed his draft capital, and he is just a playmaker. I think he's proven that, someone that if he can prove it once more on the field without getting injured or without any other reason to get off the field, you know, he should get a team interested in him, even if it isn't in Kansas City. But I think to double up off that, yeah, Xavier Worthy and even Tyquan Thornton too. These guys are kind of underrated players that have flashed, obviously. And Xavier Worthy to specify on him, you know, I think he is someone that is really going to benefit from having a real receivers coach, you know, in the building. Chad O'Shea. It's so, you know, it can be an overspoken talking point maybe to talk about who's coaching the certain positions when you have Andy Reid as the offensive mastermind and he's kind of running the show anyway, but when you look at what Worthy has struggled with, and when you look at what Worthy can improve at to become that 1,000-yard receiver, that close to 10 touchdown guy, really it's just chemistry on the deep balls, or maybe not even chemistry, but knowing exactly which angle to take, you know, which route path to take, you know, when the corner plays you this way, when the safety rotates a certain way, that's what's been the issue. I think it's not necessarily that Mahomes and Worthy aren't on the same page. It may just be that they may not be on the same page in terms of where the route path is going, and that just might be coaching. I feel like it's clear that the receivers can benefit a lot from better coaching. And so you talk about Rice, but man, Worthy is the guy that if he becomes that deep threat, that DeSean Jackson type that can really have a 70, 80 yard touchdown at any point. You know, I mean, I think he has that in him. We all know that is part of his game. That's why, you know, part of why he was drafted out of Texas. But if he can get that down, obviously that makes Rice's life easier. It just makes the whole offense so much, you know, especially with the run game, you know, being more important this year, potentially. You know, it's a huge part of the offense. It's probably the biggest X factor in this offense is Xavier Worthy, you know, taking a step forward. And so if Rice and Worthy both kind of have those contract year type performances, you know, this Chiefs offense could be humming, you know, back to its usual self.
Yeah, Worthy's an interesting guy. You know, he leads Texas in yards and receptions for three straight years. It's not like he's a one-trick pony with a nine-rounder vertical route. He was asked to do a lot of different things at Texas. His rookie year, okay, so he, the time and space and catching the ball where he's kind of out of bounds, not inbounds. Right? He had that struggle with that early on. And then when Rice goes down in game four, Hollywood Brown got hurt in the first preseason game. So he had to step up as a rookie and be the dude. And I felt like midway through the season, he got it, man. He did. He shined out through the postseason for the Chiefs. He became that guy. I was really looking forward to next year, which was last year, to see what he could do. And then, boom, he's hurt on play three in Brazil. Yeah. I don't think he ever got 100% right. I think with Worthy, it just, like you said, it's bring back that Texas, that guy that they drafted, the guy that they were enamored with at the combine. Bring that back. Utilize his skill. His skill is going down the field. He needs to get back to that point. The biggest problem the Chiefs receivers had last year was breaking man coverage. You know, it's a risky defense for teams to do because you're putting your corners out there on an island. But if you can start breaking man coverage, it opens up everything else. And hopefully Ken Walker helps that out in the backfield with running the football because you can't be totally, you know, squared away worrying about the wide receivers when you have to worry about the running game as well. So I do think Ken Walker and Mahomes play off each other a lot this coming season, but bring Worthy back to the player he was.
Yes, no, and to that point, you know, we talk about the Worthy deep balls being a huge part of that, but you mentioned it, you know, he did so much more at Texas. When he got injured last year, I mean, they've admitted it. The team has admitted that they reduced his route tree, kind of changed his route tree to obviously, you know, as you're dealing with a torn labrum, as you're playing through a labrum injury, you know, they're just trying to avoid him getting hurt and just not playing, you know, for the rest of the season. So as iffy as, you know, that strategy, you know, can be considered, you know, here or there, at the same time, it happened. And he was not running his full ability, his full route tree, because part of Worthy's strengths are the fact that he plays bigger than his size at times, you know, when the ball's in the air, you know, in contested catches, not contested catch where you're jumping up necessarily, but traffic catches, right, over the middle. Like, he can do that stuff. You know, he doesn't maybe get the credit for that because we haven't seen that necessarily, you know, since his rookie year, where I do feel like you saw that a little bit more. And you saw his routes a lot more crisp his rookie year, too. You're right. I mean, towards the end of the season, he really did start to come on for a reason. You know, I think part of that might be DeAndre Hopkins in the mix, you know, helping him out as a veteran receiver, because I really don't think he's gotten much help outside of that, you know, in terms of being a developed player. I think there was a reason we saw this whole offensive coaching staff switch over. So
yeah, his whole team, like Hollywood Brown, all these guys helping him out.
Right, and he didn't have that necessarily as much last year. This year, he's got the coaching on top of that, on top of having a guy, you know, I mean, they have a young receiving group. I still feel like there's a veteran potentially coming in the mix. You know, by the time we break training camp, you know, there might be a veteran in that receiver mix still.
I hope so. That would have to come via trade. That's what they were. That's why I thought maybe they'd get in on the A.G. Brown stuff as well. The rookie receiver, Cyrus Allen, Jalen Royals, will actually get to see a little bit more of him this year, hopefully. I was hoping to see a little bit more of him last year towards the stretch, especially towards the end of the season, where you could have made him kind of a focal point just to kind of find out what you had, get some real NFL experience catching the football. I thought that would have been really helpful for Jalen Royals last year.
Yeah, well, the interesting part with Royals is, you know, at Utah State, he really did play primarily on the outside, on the perimeter. And that's kind of what the Chiefs need, you know, in their receiver mix right now. They have a lot of guys that, you know, ideally, you know, play from the slot. I mean, Rashee Rice is obviously that dominant slot, you know, kind of that big slot playmaker. You know, even Worthy, a guy that needs to play more on the outside, you know, you can get a lot done with him from the slot, you know, working from the slot. You know, but they do need someone, obviously, to win on the outside. Tyquan Thornton is that guy, but he's more of a downfield vertical guy. If they can get someone to win on those slants, those kind of old school Sammy, not too old school, right? But Sammy Watkins, you know, just kind of quick slants, you know, get him the ball in space and get him moving. You know, that's where the Chiefs need a receiver to step up. And that's kind of what he was doing at Utah State. You know, when you think about how he was, why he became a player that potentially could have gotten picked a little higher than round four when you were thinking about the pre-draft stuff. So yeah, no, Jalen Royals is someone that has an opportunity because Cyrus Allen, the rookie, as much as, I mean, Xavier Worthy said, you know, he feels confident he's going to, you know, contribute this year. He said that in his press conference today. He was an exclusive slot player last year. Not to say he can't be an outside guy too, but he played 92% of his snaps in the slot at Cincinnati last year.
Yeah.
And so that just tells me that maybe he is going to be more of a slot only to start with, right? To you know, to at least get into the NFL. And again, Chiefs kind of need guys that can play on the outside at first. So Royals has a good little leg up there, I think.
And the interesting thing was Cyrus Allen wasn't invited to the combine. Jeff Caldwell was. Allen was drafted. Caldwell wasn't. That's the interesting thing about those guys. All right, Ron, I really enjoy you talking football with you. One final question. L'Jarius Sneed, back with the Chiefs, of course, his last year here with the Chiefs. He basically was held out of all the training camp his last year with the Chiefs. I think there's a big part of, you know, them not trusting it, the health-wise, to get that other contract. Traded Tennessee, played 12 of 34 games, the third of the games. Maybe this just for experience. It's a very low money deal for the Chiefs. Maybe to have that experience back there, different defensive packages he could be utilized. Maybe he moved to safety. We don't know, but just your thoughts on Sneed coming back.
No, I think it's a really nice move when you just kind of consider, you know, everything this team has done to kind of, you know, get the fans excited, kind of shore up the holes. You know, the defensive backfield could absolutely be a fatal flaw in this year's team, you know, just this year. You know, when we're talking about, you know, a rookie being your top corner and a guy like Noel Williams, you know, maybe he doesn't have that sophomore step up that you expect. And even the safety group, you know, I do feel like they got a good thing going, but a guy like Alohi Gilman, like first year in the system, could he not be as impactful as he could be maybe year two, year three in the system? But you get a guy like L'Jarius Sneed in. I mean, shoot, I think that just kind of gives you a little bit of reliability in that nickel player potentially. Obviously, the outside corner. Last time he played in Kansas City, he had the most dominant outside corner performance over a season I think we've seen in a long time. And you know, not necessarily saying you can expect that to come back, but at least you know he can play outside in Spags' system. But you also know he can be that playmaker, that almost that outside linebacker type, right? You know, he really can be a guy that you can play in the box. He's going to bring that physicality. Chris Jones said that when he talked about him coming back today or yesterday. And so, yeah, I think it's just a nice little piece to shore up what the defensive backfield could be, maybe just a big hole still after kind of shoring it up after, you know, losing guys that you did. It's going to be a big fix. No matter who you kind of plug back in there, Spag's system is always kind of year one. It can be a lot for those first year players, right? Sneed just kind of helps with all that. So yeah, I think it's a great signing, and it just kind of I think there's still a few more things they could do, but you can't ask for everything, right? So I think this is a really good move out of all the options they could.
Great stuff, Ron. Always good catching up with you. We'll have a
sir.
We've got a lot more football to talk about, but of course we'll talk about the 27 draft when it happens. I can't talk about it right now because I really want to, but well, actually, we start character concerns back up on Monday. So, looking at the 27 draft class.
There's got to be some summer scouting, right? There's got to be some summer scouting.
Yeah, in the matchups of the college football season. So, anyway, take care, Ron.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Jay.
There you go. Ron Kopp right there. Brendan Sorsby, the quarterback at Texas Tech. There's a new little wrinkle thrown out there today in that. I'll get to that next.
You're listening to After Hours on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Fan.
Welcome back to After Hours. Jay Binkley, Julio Sanchez, 913-586-7965. Jay Southland Tow Service text line. Just for some ideas for people to do when they're in America. Get all the international fans here for the World Cup. Just give me a few ideas. By the way, 1-1 in the Stanley Cup in a bunch of severe thunderstorms out of the area on the top scroll, but we don't have a full screen on it.
You're still watching live sports though, right?
Yeah, I am.
All right.
Brendan Sorsby, what'd you think about that? The quarterback at Texas Tech, the best quarterback in the Big 12.
What a hot mess. What a hot mess college
could
sports
have
in general
could
are.
Have been a first rounder if he'd gone out this year. But
probably wishes he would have.
Well, it looks like he's going to be able to play. And the one thing, too, is got to make a split decision here because supplemental draft, we haven't had a player selected since 2019 in the supplemental draft. Teams don't like doing it because whatever pick you use, whatever round you give on a player, you lose that pick. Like if you give a second-round pick grade for a supplemental draft pick in Sorsby, you lose your second-round pick for the 27 draft.
It's kind of silly.
It has to work out.
It's kind of silly.
Well, it comes with risk. I mean, obviously, the guy has the gambling addiction. It was a little more than that. It was 9,000 to 10,000 bets for $90,000, and 40 bets were on his own team. There are things that he admitted to doing, and all the athletic directors and a lot of coaches lost their ever-loving minds when he was allowed to keep playing.
There's no way he should be allowed to keep playing.
By
There's
a judge
no
who
way.
Was in Lubbock County, yeah. where he comes out of Lubbock, Texas.
It's insane.
And the NCAA is going to file suit, or they have filed suit back to appeal the decision. But these appeals, they asked for an escalated appeal, but these things can drag out. And the chances are he could end up playing the whole season before an appeal is finally heard. And now the Texas Attorney General is, because the Big 12 had a meeting today of four presidents. They have the athletic directors next week. They're meeting because the Big 12 is trying to figure out what to do. And now Texas is saying, be careful what you do here because we're going to come after you. You know, legally, you know, so Texas let them know they're the attorney general. They're going to fight for Sorsby here. So the Big 12 kind of stuck what to do. The Big 10 decided they were going to rule that none of their schools can schedule Texas Tech in anything. They have not. They said they're not going to do that.
Yeah,
Georgia
we'll see about
said
that.
They weren't going to do it. Now they said that they could do it. The one school that said they won't play them in anything is Nebraska. They're the school, and a lot of schools feel that way. It's weird that so many people agree with the NCAA, but you bet on your own team, man. You can't do that, man. I don't care if you're playing or not. You still know who's injured, who's not, what the team's like that week. It's just you don't do it. You don't do it because you have to be able to trust the sport. That's my thing. You have to be able to trust it. Like a lot of times when the NBA had their scandal, like people may stay away from that when betting, that you got to trust it because when you stop trusting things, like if there's a game that comes down to the end, a drop pass or an interception or a dropped fumble for no reason, you start to wonder, man. You start to have all these things. And now with all these states, you know, allowing legalized sports gambling, it is tough to put your money on something you can't trust.
Well, and there's no real repercussions to, I mean, this just
there's
goes
none.
To show. I mean, I think you technically is what suspended the first two games of the season.
First two games, Abilene Christian and Oregon State.
That's nothing.
No, it's not, but it opens up Pandora's box because if somebody else does it.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so,
then it's caught, but you better be a good player to do it. Or, you know, third string guys aren't going to get the same treatment that Brendan Sorsby is, but high profile players will.
Well, now, so here's a little bit of a side discussion from this. Is there potentially any legal ramifications for him as far as like potentially jail time? Because we have seen in professional sports, NBA, Major League Baseball, where some of these guys are being indicted for throwing games and that kind of stuff.
Well, and who knows? And were you at the legal gambling age
right.
when these things started? Because sports gambling is what typically 21, at least through that. I know 18 to gamble, but sports gambling, what's the sports gambling legal age? Because there could be some of that. That would be the one area they could probably go back on. That's the one thing I was always... In most states, it's 21 years old to do it. He's 22 now, so obviously he was betting before that. And other people were doing it so for him. So, again, that's a thin line right there. Is it legal or not?
It's not just betting on the game. Is there any chance of him having affected the game because he did have bets on those actual games?
Well, he couldn't have in Indiana because he was just practicing, wasn't playing for that when he bet on his own team. That's the only time he bet on his own team. But it's a dangerous proposition, especially in your own sport, because you know guys in the sport with teams say who's hurt, who's not. I mean, you know information other people don't when it comes to the sports betting. That opens up the box. If somebody else does it, they're going to look back and say, well, the Brendan Sorsby case was ruled on, and he was fine to play. Why am I not? The interesting thing is Tom Mars, who's the attorney for Trinidad Chambliss, he's the one that got Trinidad an extra year of eligibility. And he did it. It was an Oxford, Mississippi judge, right, that he gets the extra year of eligibility. But even he thinks he's even on the side of the NCAA on this line. I couldn't believe it. Like, these guys, a lot of these big-time guys, like, I can't believe the NCAA is allowing this to happen.
But
there's no rules. There's no rules, and that's the big problem. That's the one thing people want to rein in is you've got to have a governing body. And when you think about the Big Ten and the SEC wanting to split and have their own commissioner and get away from the NCAA – you kind of understand why. They can have their own rules and commissioners. They say, hey, you can't bet on sports. Boom. The NFL won't let guys bet on NFL games. They can on other sports, but you can't do it at the facility.
In the NCAA's defense, like, they are the governing body for college sports. What are they supposed to do when they're right, wrong, or indifferent with their rulings? If they're giving these rulings and the schools, instead of taking their ruling, they're just going and finding whatever court's gonna give them the right answer. They're gonna go to this person, to this court, to this court. What is the NCAA supposed to do?
They've never adjusted the name, image, and likeness. They haven't. I get paying the players. I understand that. I'm fine with that. But they never.
I mean, really a lot of it. Don't get me wrong. Is some of it's their own.
But the tampering and things that these coaches have, these problems with their guys, you know, being recruited in season by other schools to come play to get $5 million or something and go play. There's no repercussions. You can't.
Nope.
It's kind of on an island with things. But anyway, that's the interesting. Brendan Sorsby's an interesting guy to watch.
Pisses me off.
The guy is damn good. I get that. But there's a lot of people upset, and you rarely see people on the side of the NCAA. Keep those texts rolling in on what to do. By the way, Vegas and Carolina tied at one in this game. The series tied 2-2. Back to the Kansas City Royals thoughts here. We come back.
You're listening to After Hours on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan.
Welcome back. That there, Jay Binkley, Julio Sanchez, producing the operation. Do you still believe in the Royals?
In what regard? That they're going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, no. Are you excited when they have a 5-5 road trip? And
they've lost me. They've lost me for the season. Unfortunately,
many people have tuned out on them, and they're not going to do anything. Then all of a sudden, they bring you back in. They bring you back in because there's some guys on there. It's fun to watch. It's fun to see what Cags is doing. You get excited about it, but then, because I kept hearing it, man, they're only 4.5 back from the wild card.
Don't bring that nonsense to me.
Well, they're 6.5 back now. Matter of fact, they have the, they played two more games than the Red Sox. The Red Sox are 27-39, but they have a higher winning percentage of .409, so they're behind the Red Sox. The only team that's behind the Kansas City Royals in the whole entire American League is the Los Angeles Angels. They have 27 wins. The Royals have 28. So again, to get there, and I understand you're looking at it and say, whoa, we got a chance. Well, every team is saying that. Every team thinks that they're still in it. You got to jump all these teams and hope nobody gets hot. Hope nobody goes on a 10-game winning streak. You hope no one gets to that point where all of a sudden, you know, they're on a 10-game winning streak and boom, you know, they're in it. Because, you know, it's like Chicago, the White Sox. You know, they've been hot as of late. And Cleveland has gone 3-7 in the last 10. So now the White Sox are the first-place team in the AL Central.
It's worse. This is worst-case scenario for the Royals, where they talk themselves into thinking they can accomplish something and then just lose out on opportunities to better their team for next year.
Royals are in last place in the division. The Tigers won 11-0 today, so they're at 29 wins. The Royals at 28. But you got to jump all these teams. Then when you get to the wild card, it's like, do you really have a chance? Because, you know, last year, the last wild card team was Detroit, but they were 12 games over 500, 87-75. The Royals 13 games under 500 now. Again, Detroit was 12 games over. And as Vern said, you know, you've got a split four-game series, and you have to win at least two out of three just to get to the trade deadline and be above water. Now, the year before, in 2024, the year the Royals did make the postseason, they were tied with 86-76 with the Detroit Tigers. So, again, 59-39, something like that. I mean, you got to go way over 500, you know, to get to that point. But you got to think, I mean, you look at just the last, you know, the trends. You go back to 2023, last wild card team was an 89-win team, 73 losses. So by this count, you know, the Royals only looking at maybe can lose 37 more out of the 94 remaining games. So, yes, when you look at the big picture, think, oh, they're only 6.5, 7 back, you know, from the wild card, they got a chance. But the problem is you need everybody else to lose, you know, in front of you. And a lot of times they're playing each other where they're going to have wins in that situation where nobody's not playing each other. They all play each other, and you play that group too, and all of a sudden you're stuck in there. So, and then the injury bug that's hit now, some of the pitchers, you have Lugo taking one off the head. So it's a real mix-up for the Kansas City Royals. I'm excited about who they are. I was really excited to start the season. I really thought when you look at the AL Central thinking, all right, they really have a chance. Because I thought Chicago White Sox were going to be good at some point. I know they're not nearly as bad as what they have been.
They're ahead of schedule.
Because I thought maybe the next year would be the year. They'd make a run towards it this year, but next year would be the year. The Twins, I don't believe in at all. I think they're a mess.
Yeah.
And Cleveland, you never know what to expect for Cleveland because they just keep being consistent. But are they team you can't beat? No, Royals could compete with Cleveland.
The whole division is a bit of a mess. So what can you do?
It's a mess. But you look at it and you drive yourself crazy looking at standings, something I shouldn't do. But definitely don't be looking at the wild card at this point because you'll sit there and you'll say, oh, well, the Royals get on a streak. They can get back in this thing because that'll get you in trouble. They're 6.5 back from the wild cards. You see that?
Don't try and talk yourself into it.
Yeah. Because you're 13 games under 500. Again, you need to be at least 12 games over 500 just to even get that third wild card in baseball. 913-586-7965. What is one place that you would recommend if somebody comes up to you that's internationally coming here to follow their favorite soccer team in a base camp here in Kansas City? What are you telling them to do to make it an American? We'll discuss that next.
You're listening to After Hours on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back to After Hours. Jay Beasley, Julio Sanchez. 3-1 Carolina now. They've opened one up here on Vegas. Again, we had a Vegas win, Carolina win, Vegas win, Carolina win. I mean, it's been back and forth and back and forth. Man, Carolina Hurricanes, man.
Hey, give me 7, baby. Give me 7.
Interesting. Get this, you get the World Cup on tonight as well. So still got one more game of that. I love watching competition, like I said. But where would you take somebody? The text line suggested take them to Go Chicken Go. I agree. It's a great place to go take them to.
What about Waffle House?
Well, the strip bars were on here too, but of course they have a lot of strip bars internationally.
Yeah.
So it's not really something
that's just
to go do.
It's no Waffle House, you know?
But Buc-ee's for sure. And that's where that guy tweeted at. He said, Buc-ee's. But these deals, I once took some German people to a football game, local college football game. stopped at a gas station. They got beef jerky and they absolutely loved it. Like, it's something I was like, wow, this stuff's great. And just bought a whole bunch of it, like extra. But the Waffle House, for sure. You're going to the Waffle late at night. I mean, the late at night Waffle House trip is a must do. You go drink it. Well, some of these bars are open 23 hours now. You go drink, then you go to the Waffle House, then you go back to the bar. To be honest with you, are you going to do that? You going to experience the 23 hours of a bar?
I don't live that kind of life anymore, my friend. Unfortunately, not. I don't think I have that in me. You know.
I think honestly, I know it's cliched because we're in Kansas City, but you've got to take them to get barbecue, man. 100%, because the chances of them having, I mean, they're in the mecca of this. The best place in the world to get it is right here in Kansas City. You're not going to find it anywhere. You're not going to find barbecue places like this in the Netherlands or in Algeria or in England or any Argentina, anywhere. The barbecue here, hands down, the best. I would tell anybody in America that came to Kansas City, make sure you eat it. I know it's a cliche, like, what's your favorite barbecue restaurant and stuff like this? People ask cheese players, but they're coming internationally. You're 100%. You're just listing out barbecue restaurants at this point. Again, I don't care where you take them to. Find your favorite, take them there. I'd do two or three of them and suggest them go to these barbecue restaurants. But again, I know we're in Kansas City. It's a cliche to throw barbecue, but that's 100%.
Well, I would
that's
just 100% say
would be the top of the list.
American foods, like American-specific foods in general, like go get some wings or some street tacos. Or
get some hot wings,
A damn good burger, like legit.
Come to Peanut and have some wings.
Right. There's some American staples that they don't have or are not as good at making here as overseas.
And the beer, you can get some really good beers in Europe, honestly. You can. Yep. But the American craft beer industry.
Pizzas, you can get pizzas everywhere.
But the American craft beer, hands down, like the best in the world.
Yep. What about Costco and grab themselves a hot dog, you know?
Costco hot dog, sure. Yeah.
They can buy all the bulk things, a pound of mayo.
They might want to save some money, too, with all the money they're spending on hotels and airfare and Ubers and you name it to all the different
events.
Buy
in bulk and then, you know, save some money.
Yeah, but definitely barbecue. I mean, I think that's the proper answer. That and a Waffle House trip, and I'd make sure to find a Buc-ee's and take them to Buc-ee's. Show them the experience of what we like to do in
maybe
America.
They can get a nice taste of our healthcare system, you know? Why not?
Well, just go to one of these super gas stations we have where you can go in there and buy anything you want and have that experience of doing that. But definitely barbecue and Waffle House. I saw this poll up on one of the news stations. They were doing it, and I was shocked that barbecue wasn't on there. Like Taco Bell, all these places were on it, but no barbecue places were on it. I was like, what are we doing here? If someone came from a different country, of course you're taking them to what we're known for in Kansas City, and it's the best in the United States, which means it's the best barbecue in the world is right here in Kansas City. It's like the American Royal, the World Barbecue Contest, right here. It's the best of the best. To me, that's just the right answer. It's the only answer.
That's correct.
So, yes, they do it. Yes, they got Costco's outside the U.S. I don't know if they do the hot dog sales at different Costco's internationally?
I'm not sure.
But McDonald's was on there. I was like, McDonald's everywhere.
McDonald's is everywhere. The chains.
What do they call it
in
Pulp Fiction? The Royale with cheese?
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
Oh, man. Good stuff, Julio. Enjoyed the show tonight. Go watch some World Cup tonight.
I will. Fall asleep to it.
Definitely.
Playing.
Yeah, we got Team USA tomorrow. Don't forget the Peanut. Robin Seedot will be out there at Peanut 64th Street. And I-29. Good night, everybody.
You're listening to After Hours on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.